Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, the 17th of July. Hello and welcome to Africa Link, a DW program that keeps you updated with what's happening around the continent and beyond. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe with all your comments on the stories that we've been posting on our Facebook page.
Coming up, religious conflict rages on in Nigeria's Taraba State. Thousands are displaced and are in dire need of help.
The Mambila people wanted to wipe off the Fulani generation.
In the whole of Jos Plateau. Wipe off simply means to kill everybody and their cows.
Mazda recalls 19,000 cars from South Africa due to faulty airbags.
If something has to protect you, then that thing must play its part. Mazda should have discovered this problem earlier enough.
And on the social media platform, many of our fans and followers on Facebook page are not happy with the way the authorities in Nigeria are handling ethnic tensions in Taraba State. I'll be reading some of the comments.
Stay tuned for all that and a lot more to come in the program. But first, let's hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. EU foreign ministers have met in Brussels on Monday to discuss migration issues in Libya and elsewhere. The ministers agreed to disrupt the business of people smugglers and human traffickers by restricting the export and supply of inflatable boats or dinghies to Libya. Meanwhile, Chancellor Angela Merkel also discussed refugees, saying in Berlin on Sunday she would resist a fixed cap on the number of migrants Germany accepts.
I have a clear stance on a cap for the number of refugees admitted into the country, which is that I will not accept it. We share the view that we need to reduce and organize and direct migration. We need to fight the causes for migration, and I think this way we can achieve our aims without a cap.
Also in Brussels, the EU and Britain have kicked off their first full round of talks on Brexit negotiations, with both sides seeking a quick breakthrough. UK Foreign Minister Boris Johnson said he hoped the bloc would accept a very fair and serious offer Britain had made on the rights of EU citizens.
A very fair, serious offer has been put on the table by the UK government about citizenship, the value we place on the 3.2 million EU citizens in our country. Very good offer that we're making to them and the security they can have about their future. And I hope very much that people will look at that offer in the spirit it deserves.
Local officials confirmed Monday that 27 people have drowned and 50 remain missing after a passenger vessel capsized in Congo's southwest. The accident occurred early Friday on the Kasai River. A local governor attributed the accident to stormy weather and poor conditions, saying a motorized canoe held some 90 people. Around 100 people died last year in boat accidents in the Central African country. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Cameroon has launched a search party after 34 people went missing when a military vessel capsized off the country's Atlantic coast. The country's defense minister vowed to conduct a thorough search mission, while President Paul Biya ordered to intensify operations. Three soldiers have so far been rescued. Nine people were killed in a suicide bombing attack after a female bomber targeted a mosque in northeastern Nigeria. The attack, which occurred on the outskirts of Maiduguri, left a total of 18 people injured. Witnesses said the bombing took place just as worshippers began their morning prayers. Maiduguri has been hit by a wave of terrorist attacks in recent weeks, with some claimed by the radical Islamist group Boko Haram. And elsewhere in the news, Somalia's internet has finally returned after an outage of more than 3 weeks. Officials say a commercial ship cut an undersea cable, causing the outage and costing the Horn of African nation some 10 million euros a day. The loss of internet service sparked anger across Somalia, with the government calling it a major disaster. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
The This is DW's Africa Link, a program that keeps you up to date with what's happening around the continent and beyond the world. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk.
We start with a look at the situation of refugees fleeing conflict in the Tarab state in Nigeria. According to the Red Cross Society, over 7,000 of them are trapped in inhuman conditions at the Nigeria-Cameroon border. Medical staff say many of them have died while others are sick and need urgent help. These people are not fleeing Boko Haram. No, they are fleeing a religious conflict. Moki Kinseka reports from Atta in Cameroon.
Cameroon Red Cross attending to hundreds of Nigerian refugees at the Atta Catholic Health Center. Most are hungry, tired and traumatized. They have walked on foot from Nigeria's Taraba State. 53-year-old Bello Dewa Umar, who escaped from the Nigerian village of Bamga in Gembu, says they are fleeing violent conflict between the Mambilas and Fulani Muslim herdsmen.
The Mambila people wanted to wipe off the Fulani generation.
The Mambila people wanted to wipe off the Fulani generation in the whole of Jos Plateau. Wipe off simply means to kill everybody and their cows. I narrowly escaped. Most of these Mambila militias were there, timing those Fulanis who will be crossing to Cameroon.
The refugees have crossed over with at least 2,000 cattle. Most of the cows were seized in Nigeria and some by thieves on Cameroon territory. Women and children constitute a majority of those arriving. Jean-Marie Kwe, a medical officer at the Catholic Health Center, warns they are running short of medication to treat the wounded.
Nous avons au début commencé à prendre en charge.
We started taking care of them with the means the center disposed of, since the patients have nothing. But we are running short of supplies. If the state does not come immediately to replace our stock of medication or pay the medical bills of these refugees, we will have serious problems and may not be able to treat villagers.
But there is more conflict between the refugees and their host communities over land. Local farmers complain their cattle are destroying their crops. Justin Munshili, a senior Cameroon government official, says he has ordered that all border schools be opened for the refugees while their cattle are kept in secure environments.
We have instructed all traditional rulers to receive them for humanitarian reasons. I noticed that children were vulnerable and instructed medical staff to vaccinate them against polio and treat them of all illnesses.
Nigeria's Taraba State has over 80 ethnic groups distributed among the two major religions, Islam and Christianity. It is a permanent hotspot of ethno-religious conflict. Media reports indicated that Fulani villages were invaded by some ethnic militiamen, a claim the Nigerian government has dismissed, saying it is simply tensions between farmers and cattle ranchers over land.
Moki Kinseka reporting in from Atta, Cameroon. Now, Isaac, ethnic conflict in Africa, a subject that really attracts lots of debate.
Definitely. And we posted something on our Facebook page asking what have the two leaders, that is Paul Biya and Muhammadu Buhari, done to address ethnic tensions and issues affecting directly their
and
people.
And that has drawn lots of comments.
Yeah, but I will start with a few right now. Yusuf Aminu from Nigeria says, I think Buhari and Biya just want peace for their people. The attacks are unprecedented.
Yes, that's what he says. But Francis Zira rather says Buhari will not be able to solve the ethnic problem because he's not from an ethnic minority group. We have a fundamental problem of leadership here.
Well, Christopher Flam says both leaders need to do a better job at communicating with ethnic groups in crisis and the general public. Also, increased budget allocations to help displaced people to settle should be debated. Anyway, Jane, there are so many comments, but just remind our listeners, especially Francis, that Nigeria's acting president, Yemi Osinbajo, ordered last month troops to keep the peace in the restive state of Taraba. In the meanwhile, they can continue sending the comments on DW Africa.
Yes, they can send the comments as we go to Brussels, where the second round of Brexit talks resumed with both sides seemingly far apart on the subject of citizens' rights after Brexit officially takes place in less than 2 years' time. The EU wants to secure substantial progress on four main issues before the talks can begin. For details, Zipra Nyambura.
There are four major issues to be cleared before the talks can begin: rights of EU citizens, free trade, and financial settlement and the border issue in Ireland. There is an estimated 3 million EU nationals in Britain. Once Brexit is implemented, each of these would have to apply individually for permission to stay in what they have called settled status. Britain's Foreign Minister Boris Johnson said the UK off was a good one.
A very fair, serious offer has been put on the table by the UK government about citizenship, the value we place on the 3.2 million EU citizens in our country, the very good offer that we're making to them and the security they can have about their future. And I hope very much that people will look at that offer in the spirit it deserves, because it's a great offer.
But European officials say the proposal does not go far enough. EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, said it was time to get down to work for the success of the negotiation.
We need to examine and compare our respective positions in order to make good progress. As you know, our negotiating groups will work on citizens' rights, on the financial settlement, and other separation issues.
The European Parliament warned last week that it could veto the final deal if Britain does not give EU citizens more rights if they choose to stay in Britain after Brexit, which is due to take place in March 2019.
Zipora Nyambura with that report. And now we go back to Africa, and this time to South Africa. In the business world, Mazda South Africa Motor Corporation is recalling 19,000 vehicles in South Africa due to possible faulty airbags. The affected vehicles were produced from 2003 to date, and the affected models are Mazda 2, Mazda 6, and Mazda RX-8. Tusok Malu reports from Johannesburg.
The recall follows investigations into three different Tegeta Corporation manufactured airbags, which discovered that their inflators were defective. The airbags in question are fitted on both driver and passenger sides. Mazda says the inappropriate production and storage of the propellant in the inflator could cause it to ignite abnormally when used in case of an accident. The announcement has brought worries to some Mazda owners in South Africa. Blessing Komo is one of them, although he has been driving his Mazda 6 for 3 years now without any incident.
We feel that those cars are definitely unsafe for people to travel in. Because if something has to protect you, then that thing must play its part. Mazda should have discovered this problem earlier enough.
Then Mapalala Mabunda, businessman and car owner in Johannesburg, is urging Mazda drivers who have had injuries or family deaths related to these airbag faults to take the car manufacturer head on.
Let people run to court and they must be assisted. They must be compensated.
Reuters has quoted a survey revealing that Tegeta airbag inflators have been linked to 17 deaths and more than 108 injuries worldwide. The recall spills over South Africa's borders, since Mazda South Africa is also in charge of the dealership networks in Botswana, Namibia, and Swaziland. Mazda sales in South Africa went up from 4,939 units in 2014 to 9,066 units in 2015. In 2016, the company was selling an average of 1,050 units per month.
To Sokumalo in Johannesburg.
And as promised, to go back to our top story about the Cameroon, Nigerians at the Cameroon border. Derek Tower says Biya has a lot on his hands to deal with: internal crisis, budgetary issues, Boko Haram, etc. I doubt if he has the resources. Carlos Miguel de Dilberto wrote on a Facebook page and said health-wise, we are not suitable for leadership roles, them, meaning them. Therefore, do not expect anything good.
And Osman Berafan from Northern Nigeria says, I think enough is enough. The two countries have to seriously face this challenge and tackle it by accepting each other, helping and mutual relationship before it turns worse. And Espoir Mulondola says, we need leaders who know our needs first and work for us, nothing more. That's all we had for this time. We shall be reading some of their comments a little later. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kemet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk.
And in the next 15 minutes, we get to hear about a mobile nurse who is helping Ethiopian girls returning from the Arab states regain their dignity. But first, we go to Kenya. He is a famous activist from Kenya who has given President Uhuru Kenyatta's government a headache as he rallies protests against corruption. Boniface Mwangi was once a photojournalist. His turnaround came when he published pictures of the 2007 post-election violence that left hundreds dead. In 21 days' time, the activists will be among those vying to be voted as a member of parliament in Kenya's general elections. DW's Andrew Wasike caught up with him as he campaigned on the streets and filed this story.
The man who you can hear in the background shouting is none other than Boniface Mwangi. Surrounded by dozens of anti-riot police officers armed with batons, he can barely walk as the police officers carry him by the waist belt of his jeans. Why has he decided to run for a top political seat when he is against MPs?
I think I'm tired of having leaders who don't listen to us. I protest, I go to parliament, and every time we stand up, we stand against injustice. No one hears us. When I have a problem, when there's a land grabbing issue, when there's corruption issues, people who are supposed to be elected to represent us do not represent us very well. So I want to go to parliament to be the voice of us, the young people of this country. We're the majority, about 70% of the population is under 35. And so I want to go to parliament to work for them and to work for us.
Unlike other politicians who organize massive rallies where they dish out tons of money, Mwangi is doing things differently. He goes from door to door with a team of volunteers, handing out leaflets with his manifesto and talking to the voters. He says 50% of his salary will go to the poor in the community should he win the parliamentary seat.
So I'm running because I'm tired of bad leadership. I'm tired of neglect. I'm tired of police harassment. The only way you can solve some of these things is being in parliament. So I want to go to parliament where the laws are made to amend and make laws for us, the young people of this country, who are not listened by anyone.
Most young people are confident he will win.
Because I love Boni, I trust in him, the things that he has been doing, and I know he's winning. Because from the grounds, people talk good of him.
But what he is telling the voters is nothing new. Kenyans are used to politicians who make empty promises while campaigning. I asked him how different he would be.
I have a track record of what I've been able to do. There's not a single person in my generation, I'm 34 years old, who has fought for the rights of Kenyans than I have done. I've been beaten, I've been tear gassed, I've been arrested, I've been thrown in jail so many times, and I have so many court cases for fighting for Kenyans. So what I'm going to do in parliament is a continuation of that fight. I'm not going to change my style of doing things. I'm going to parliament as an activist. I'm going to parliament to work for us.
The activist will vie on his new political outfit called Ukweli Political Party. Mwangi says he does not support any of the two main contenders in Kenya's presidential seat. He believes it is time for a real change and fresh way of doing things.
Andrew Wasike with that story about John Boniface Mwangi.
Now, Jane, just to bring it to speed, recently Boniface Mwangi told the media that in Kenya we have vampire leaders. They suck our blood every day. I'm tired of not being listened to. I'm tired of our thieving politicians. I'm running to become the voice of the people inside parliament. And there's a lot of anger and frustration in what he told the media.
Yes, and indeed, he seems to command quite a significant
following,
yes. For instance, Dan Weku here says, I regret being against your kind motives for the people of Kenya. We need more people like you. Let's not get tired of demanding for the right things. And that's not him alone. There is also Mure Mungari who says, continue to chip in and not pitch in.
Papa Wendy Soko tweeted, you need to embark on asking the hard questions. Why does the EBC, meaning the Electoral Commission, register still have ghost voters? Tyrese says, Boniface Mwangi is the only person I can say represents what I believe in. Just wishing he was running for president, I would probably line up. And Johnny Muriuki says, he seems to be the only youthful MP that is in the contest. Back to you, Jen.
Well, Isaac, we can only wish our fellow journalists good luck in that election.
Yeah.
Health check.
Well, it's not the first time we are reporting about abuse of African women in Arab countries. In this report, we focus on those who dedicate their efforts in helping those who return with harrowing tales. In Ethiopia, Abai Kasahun is a mobile nurse. She is not only providing medical care, but also helping the victims regain their dignity through psychological counseling. Coletta Gwanjohi caught up with Kasahun, and her report is now presented by Abubakari Jalo.
Abei Kasahun is packing her nursing supply for the day. She is preparing her visit to female returning migrants. Abei works for Life Addis, a non-governmental organization that has so far assisted 183 returning migrants. The organization offers them training and helps them get a job, but Abei's task is to give medical and psychological help. Today she is meeting a group of women who return from Arab countries.
Some are raped, some have some personal reproductive health problems. So I can go there and teach them how to use these protective materials. And this one is testing how to test their pregnancy at home and so on.
Ziwad Nesh Zayoum worked in Beirut for 2 years and later in Dubai. She says both of her female employees were cruel and failed to pay her all of her dues.
My father died when I was young. I stopped school and opted for the Arab countries, but nothing comforted me there.
Some of them have terrifying experiences, like Miska Abera. She worked in Beirut and her pay was $100 per month. But this wasn't even the worst problem.
I had endured many challenges, but the sexual harassment from my employer's son was too much for me.
Abei says many return back home with sexually transmitted diseases. They want to start a new life, but don't know how.
As they migrated illegally and returned empty-handed, they have some psychological problems and some health-related problems like health, family planning matters.
Besides the risk of getting sexually transmitted diseases, there is more. 28-year-old Eleni Zeham just gave birth 2 weeks ago and is still at home. She worked in Dubai for 4 years. She doesn't want to go into details about what happened, but she sums it up in one sentence.
Foreign country, never again.
It takes time for the women to share their personal problems freely. That's why Nurse Abei is on call any time of the day. She believes the psychosocial healing of these women depends on having someone responding to them at any time.
It's important to us and for them to know their current status, what happened to them. This is our obligation to follow them, whether they are at class or not.
A report by Coletta Wanjohi. And now, sports. The 8th Wimbledon Championship ended with Roger Federer taking the win of the day. His fans immediately took to different platforms to congratulate him, as Croatia's Marian Cilic seemed unable to handle the pressure. I've been speaking to DW's Chuck Penfold about what he makes of the event. Take a listen.
Well, yeah, I mean, Roger Federer is—he's actually moved up to number three again with that win at Wimbledon. He's a more accomplished player than Marin Cilic, but Marin Cilic, I think we shouldn't be too hard on him because, you say he didn't handle the pressure well. I guess you could argue that, but he also had a problem. He had a blister on one of his feet, and that caused him a lot of discomfort, so he wasn't able to perform at the level he could otherwise perform. Look, you know, Federer this season, he's come back really dominant. You know, he won the Australian Open, now he's won Wimbledon, became the first guy to win Wimbledon without losing a single set in the whole tournament. That's the first time that's happened since Bjorn Borg did it in 1976. What he did, the thing about Federer is this summer he's fully fit. He quit after Wimbledon last year.
Yes.
Because he had a knee injury, took the whole rest of the year off to let the knee injury heal, and came back, you know, fit for the Australian Open. He's also set out the clay court tournaments this summer because he knows that Rafael Nadal will probably win them anyway. So this gave him the freshness, and he just looks at the age of 35, amazing.
That's not all, but we want to recall that he actually won his first Wimbledon title 14 years ago, and now he also becomes the first man to win this trophy 8 times. What does this mean for him in terms of his career?
Well, it means a couple of things. I mean, first of all, yeah, that first Wimbledon win was way back in 2003. What it means in real terms is, for one thing, it moves him up to number 3 in the men's rankings. You could actually see him moving up to number 1, maybe. He's on his form right now.
And from the women's side there, we saw Gabbana Muguruza also taking that very wonderful beat against Williams there. And with this match, he actually comes now top to the 5th position in the world rankings. Does this change anything in these 20-year-old careers?
Well, yeah, actually moved up a number of places to 5th place. We should also remember that that was a bit of a mismatch in terms of age. She's only 23 and Venus Williams is 37. Mm-hmm. She's the oldest a woman to make a final at Wimbledon in a long time, I think over 2 decades. I think the key for Muguruza is going to be how she handles this victory. She won at the French Open in 2016, and she didn't handle it very well. She sort of got off track, went out early at the Rio Olympics and the U.S. Open. So I think this time she's looking to learn from that experience and going to try to savor it, put it a little bit more behind her.
Well, let's leave it at that and have a quick talk at the Euro Champions for the ladies this time round. We saw that the hosts, Netherlands, beat Norway 1-0 while Denmark edged out on Belgium. Now, all eyes are suddenly on the perennial winners, that's Germany. But there must be a lot more to expect, isn't it? The tournament just started after all.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, basically it seems like whenever you put Germany in a football tournament, expectations are high on the men's side or the women's side. Of course, we had the Confederation Cup and the under-21 titles already this year. So the Germans, the women are going for a German hat-trick this summer. As you say, perennial winners, they've won 6 in a row. They've won 8 overall, so they're actually going for their 7th in a row and their 9th overall. It's just a fabulous record. They know it's going to be difficult. They're going to have a difficult game against Sweden tonight because most of their contests have been won by Germany, the contest between these two teams, but almost always by just one goal.
Jack Penfold, Isaac, interesting world of sports. Did you watch the game, by the way?
Definitely. That was a must-watch for me.
I can imagine.
I've always loved Wimbledon because of the grass. It doesn't know the mighty, it doesn't know the lowly when it comes to the tennis world.
Yes, exactly. But are you also watching the women?
Yeah, I watched the women. Muguruza, I bet on Muguruza.
I mean,
because
the football,
she was very young.
Isaac.
Yeah, football I do, but okay, talk about tennis first and foremost.
Yes.
Muguruza, you know, she's young, just like you heard from Chuck Penfold.
Yes.
Only 23 years old. And well, even Venus has shown the courage, you know, to show that age doesn't matter. She
yes.
can still, you know, fight until the
she's
end to the finals.
Fit.
But many people had put their bet on Muguruza. She's young and energetic and
had
come to
it.
Prove that I'm here to show what I can give.
Excellent.
Even, you know, in the men's, well, Roger Federer was sure that, you know, he's
great
coming to fight for this.
That's good.
Anyway, Jen.
Yes.
One story that is making, you know, doing well on a Facebook page is about the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who has rejected calls within her party to limit the number of refugees from war-torn areas like Syria and Africa. Many people have watched it, they have clicked on it, they have shared it, and they have commented. Obafem says Chancellor Merkel has shown a lot about humanitarian side by giving these asylum seekers a second chance. Let other leaders from the G20 countries replicate what she has done. This will make our world a better place.
Interesting. And Rusademe Obweye from Nigeria says, after I watched a documentary about Germany, I think I love there. So Germany could just be a place to live a life.
And Rafa Charles Newi from Nigeria says, I think there should be a limit because there may be a potential harm to the country.
Interesting. Those are his comments. Potential calm or no potential calm. We leave it to him. But we have our very loyal listener here, Usman Damaturu from Nigeria, who says, Merkel will remain as my best leader in the whole Europe of her time. My sympathies to needs. I don't know what he wants to say.
He says
here,
her sympathy to the needy.
To the needy. Okay, to the needy is worth to emulate by our African allies as well as the world at large.
And Obiechina Peter says, well, she's got her reasons for rejecting the calls within her party. Germany is the new free world after the US. It is a bold political decision to help these refugees.
Interesting how our listeners and followers have their own opinions that they keep on expressing there. There's another one here from Isha Kuku who says, I support her decision. Refugees should be allowed to stay wherever they wish to.
Yeah, anyway, they can keep on commenting. They just have to visit our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we always come back to these stories whenever we can. Back to you, Jane.
Yes, and we shall be here with more exciting stories and reports tomorrow, same time. From the entire Africa team, Africa Link, have a nice time.